From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Protests are taking place across Canada in solidarity with First Nations protectors against a major pipeline project run by TransCanada. The Wet'suwet'en First Nation hereditary chiefs and land defenders have been opposing a fracked gas pipeline in northern British Columbia that cuts right through their lands. The land protectors have set up camps that have been routinely attacked by the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Dozens have been arrested, but the solidarity protests are now spreading across Canada. My guest is Jennifer Wickham. She is the media coordinator for the Gidimten camp. Welcome to the program, Jennifer.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And please correct my pronunciation whenever I mess up. Tell me where you are, where this camp is, and explain in a nutshell what this struggle is about.
Well, the Gidimten camp, I guess the original Gidimten camp, is at 44 kilometer on the Maurice Forest Service Road. So it's 44 kilometers from the nearest town, which is Houston, BC. And since last year, there were two other camps that were set up. One was a watch camp at 39 kilometer on that same Forest Service Road. There was also a camp set up, a supply camp set up at 27 kilometer on the same Forest Service Road. So all three camps have been run by the Gidimten clan. So the actual challenge and struggle that's happening right now in our territory isn't about a singular project. So there have been several previously proposed pipelines, and there will be several proposed subsequent pipelines to the Coastal GasLink pipeline owned by TC Energy, previously TransCanada. This is about jurisdiction. So it's about the rights and title of our hereditary chiefs of the Wet'suwet'en Nation and the outcome of the Delgamuukw and Gisdaywe court case that the Supreme Court made a decision on in favor of us in 1997. And this has always been about our jurisdiction in our territory and the right to free, prior, and informed consent and the right to say no to industry that are trying to invade our territories.
So the courts have given you jurisdiction to essentially protect your, to have your own sovereignty over your lands, but these private interests want to run pipelines through the territory. On what legal basis does law enforcement, in particular the RCMP, invade the land and make arrests?
So the RCMP are using the interlocutory injunction granted by Judge Church. And within that injunction is an enforcement order. So they are authorized to enforce the injunction. Nowhere in the injunction does it say that they have to enforce it. And nowhere in the injunction does it say that they can have an exclusion zone. So it's really a precarious situation that the RCMP have put themselves in. The commanders that are in charge of the raids are making decisions on the fly and completely on their own. They are making arbitrary decisions about who they're going to arrest, and there have actually not been any charges filed on anybody that has been arrested so far on our territory.
I want to play for our audience a video of the most recent arrests by the RCMP. This is part of the struggle that we've been covering now that's taking place in northern BC.
Please stay calm.
No entry.
Stay calm. Police, stay calm. Police, stay calm.
My name is Staff Sergeant Charney from the Kirk RCMP. We are enforcing the BC Supreme Court injunction issued December 31st, 2019. This area is now part of the police exclusion zone. Please gather your effects and immediately depart the area. If you refuse to depart the area, you will be arrested for obstruction. You have 10 minutes to depart.
You are not welcome here! You are not-
And that is some powerful footage of RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, arresting the people who have been occupying one of the Wet'suwet'en camps in northern BC. And I understand it's part of ongoing such encroachments on the land and arrests. Jennifer, tell me a little bit about the arrest. What has happened to some of the people who've been arrested? The video that we just watched, I understand, was of a set of arrests that took place in early February?
Yeah, so there were several different waves of invasion. The first arrests that were made at what is known as the Wolverine Watch Camp at 39 kilometer on the Maurice FSR. And those people were taken out of their beds at 4:45 in the morning. There were heavily militarized RCMP tactical teams. There were RCMP dogs. There were people with assault rifles, and they came in yelling and screaming at people at 5 o'clock in the morning, dragging them out of bed. One person was fearful for their life and locked themselves in a vehicle, and they smashed the windows of that vehicle and drug that person out without their clothes on. Into the snow, into the cold. Those people were held in cells in the Houston RCMP detachment and then later released with no charges. Those people were not in violation of the injunction. They were not blocking the road. They were not impeding any work. There was nothing in the injunction that the RCMP could refer to in order to lay charges against any of those six people that were arrested.
So it sounds like it was just basically a way to intimidate people.
Absolutely. The next wave of invasion happened at the Gitumden camp at 44 kilometer, where four unarmed Indigenous land defenders were arrested. There is footage out now of the sniper that had their gun pointed at them.
And I understand that there are tactical units of RCMP that have been posted in and around the territory. They're armed and they're, you know, worried about being photographed and videotaped, but they have been documented sort of being posted around the area.
Yeah, the media people that were at the 39 kilometer camp, when they came in at 5 a.m., were told that if they photographed or videoed the tactical teams, they would be arrested.
Wow.
So media were threatened with arrest if they got any footage of the tactical units. And at 44 kilometer, because there was a barricade at the bridge, they actually used two helicopters to drop the tactical teams in behind, essentially blocking off the camp at 44 kilometer. And they counted 32 tactical team members. So those are heavily militarized RCMP in green camouflage clothing with assault rifles.
And 32. So they are basically turning this into a war zone.
Exactly. And this always has been a war for our territory. The Wet'suwet'en people have always had really strict trespass laws. You know, we have never given consent for any of the industry that has come into our territory and stolen our resources and our land.
So the I understand that in addition to, you know, violating people's rights to their own land, they're essentially violating free speech rights. If they're stopping even journalists from trying to document their presence, the RCMP seem to be curbing on people's freedom to speak out and to document what's happening.
Absolutely. And we've seen that at all of the arrests that have happened on our territory. They have isolated the media to a point where it's very difficult for them to even see what the RCMP are doing to the people that are on the ground. We are also seeing some really interesting censorship on social media. People that are sharing posts from our Facebook pages, for example, their privacy settings are being automatically changed to only me. People that are posting on Instagram are having messages coming up saying that are being reported and removed. So, and that's people that are using the hashtags #WhatSoAttendStrong, etc. Those accounts and those posts are being removed from Instagram. People's messages aren't being able to be shared on Facebook. You know, all the media people are being told what they can and can't photograph or video during the arrest. They're being essentially detained or corralled a certain distance away from the arrests that are happening so that they're not able to accurately or clearly document what's taking place.
So the hashtag #WhatSoAttendStrong is a good way for people to at least try to find what's happening on social media. And maybe, of course, the bigger the footprint on social media, the harder it might be to censor those posts. So this is a struggle that has taken, has now garnered attention, not just in Canada, but all over the world. Tell me about the solidarity protests that are taking place in cities around Canada. I understand that in Vancouver, which is also, of course, in British Columbia, there have been a lot of protests, people blocking streets, people showing up, not just First Nations folks, but other folks in solidarity as well.
Yeah, it's been really heartwarming and really uplifting to see all of the solidarity actions that are taking place across Canada. And these are completely autonomous actions because I believe that people are seeing what could happen to them. The Wet'suwet'en have really strong court cases and precedents behind us. We have never ceded or surrendered our territory. We are a sovereign people. And yet the government and the RCMP can still invade us and basically bulldoze us over for the promise of a pipeline that is actually not even a feasible project. So, you know, the rights, the human rights that are being violated, the Indigenous rights that are being violated, I think are really getting people's attention because Canada has espoused itself to being a free country and having a good relationship with Indigenous people and participating in reconciliation. And, you know, the definition of reconciliation, to reconcile something means to make it good again. And Indigenous people know that the relationship with Canada has never been good.
Let's actually see, get a sense of one of these solidarity protests that have been taking place around Canadian cities in solidarity with the Wet'suwet'en struggle to keep out the pipeline projects. For our radio audience, there are what appear to be about 100 folks holding hands and dancing and chanting in Canadian cities around. This is the sort of thing that's happening in cities like Vancouver in solidarity with the Wet'suwet'en struggle against the pipeline projects that are attempting to cut through their territory in northern British Columbia. My guest, Jennifer Wickham, is the media coordinator for the Gidimtan camp, one of several camps in the area. What about the government's response? Presumably, the national government has taken note of what his Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said or not said around this.
Yeah, I don't believe that the provincial or the federal government will actually do anything meaningful. I have heard that the provincial government wants to send a member of their cabinet or a representative to come and speak with the hereditary chiefs, and the hereditary chiefs have been very clear that they want a nation-to-nation discussion. So that would be with the federal government, because the Wet'suwet'en are not a municipality. We're not part of a larger nation. We are a sovereign nation.
And so the just because that nation happens to be within the borders of a province, it sounds as though the RCMP have essentially flouted legal precedent, but you would like to negotiate directly with the federal government.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about the hereditary chiefs. What does that mean? What is the sort of decision-making body that for people on the outside, so that we can understand what the structure is, what the decision-making is, what the authority is?
So within the Wet'suwet'en Nation, there are 5 different clans, and within those clans are house groups. So that's essentially family groups. And so within the entire nation is 13 house groups, and each house has a house chief that acts as a spokesperson for their house. So, for example, within the Gidimden clan, there are 3 houses. And so the Gidimden have 3 house chiefs that represent and act on business for the entire Gidimden clan. The jurisdiction that these house chiefs have is directly connected to territory. And so each house has one or multiple territories that they are responsible for. And the stories that go with those territories and the jurisdiction was one of the outcomes of the Delgamuukw and Gisdaywe court decision in 1997. That it is the collective house group that has the jurisdiction and authority over those territories. It's not the Indian Act Band system, which only has jurisdiction over the reserves. I know that there's a lot of confusion around that in general society. And so the jurisdiction was actually something that has already been addressed within the Canadian legal system.
And explain also the responsibility that the Wet'suwet'en feel, and in terms of protecting the land, the responsibility for future generations. Of course, it's your land; you have the right to do with it as you wish. But it's also the tradition behind it is something that is quite instructive to people around the world who are struggling against extractive industries, right?
Yeah, we have a lot of laws within our system, and one of them is trespass. So we don't have the authority to go into another person's territory. And that stands true even within the different clans. Myself, as a Gidimden member, I could not go into Lhkamasu territory and make decisions or take resources or trespass on their land without their free, prior, and informed consent. And so with the responsibility to the future, that is embedded in all of our laws that apply to our Yinta. You know, we can't make a decision for ourselves. We have to think of our entire nation and all of our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren yet to be born. That is something that is a common theme within our laws in regards to our territory and our jurisdiction over it.
What does the word Yinta mean?
Sorry, Yinta, loosely translated, means our territory, but it's inclusive of everything on that territory.
So everything under the ground, the air, the water.
Exactly.
What's at stake for the corporations? And it's the corporation that was once TransCanada, but also Coastal GasLink. Presumably, these are really big projects for these companies that are seeking to make a lot of money off of them.
Presumably. But I think they might want to check the LNG market recently. I don't think there's much money in it. So
The liquefied natural gas industry has been flooded with so much fracked gas that prices have gone down. Is that what you're alluding to?
Exactly.
And so where do you think this is all going to go? I'm assuming the camps will remain, but RCMP has planned more raids, more arrests. At some point somebody could get hurt seriously. What do you hope will happen in the future? Is there a legal case in the courts that you're waiting for? And what do you expect for the next few weeks and months to hold?
I believe there are several legal actions process. Different clans are taking different approaches. And so I can't speak to all of the different clans that are involved. But I can tell you that our end goal has never changed. Our end goal is to have the RCMP and industry out of our territories.
And so at some point you expect maybe the federal government to intervene?
That's a really good question. I don't know if the federal government will intervene. Everybody seems to be giving us a different story of like who actually has the authority. So I know for sure the Wet'suwet'en have the authority.
Where can people find out more about what's happening, and how do you hope people will express solidarity here in the United States, especially as we watch the struggle unfold in Canada?
People can find information from a multiple of different sources. So there is our website, iintaaccess.com. There is the Unist'ot'en website, which is unist'ot'en.camp. And then we also have our social media pages. So the Gitumden camp is Wet'suwet'en access point on Gitumden territory. We have a Gitumden camp Twitter account, as well as an Instagram account, and Unist'ot'en has a Facebook page as well as a Twitter account. So there's many different sources, whatever your preferred platform is. And I think as far as solidarity actions, I think people have been really creative, and we certainly have information on our Yinta Access website of suggestions for people if they want to do anything in support or in solidarity of the Wet'suwet'en. I think one of the things that I really encourage people to do as a long-term vision is to build the relationships with the people whose territory you're occupying. For our non-Indigenous or our settler allies, that is something really important that we want to see happen as an outcome of all of this. We want our Indigenous relatives all over Turtle Island to start enforcing their laws and reviving their traditions and their territories. And they are going to need support to do that. You know, we can't do this alone. We haven't been doing this alone. And I want to take this opportunity to say, Nene Kelia, thank you very much to all of the people all across Turtle Island that have been taking actions in solidarity. It's really important to keep the pressure on the companies and on the governments and on the RCMP that are just taking the liberties with the enforcement order into invading our territory and putting guns in our people's faces. I think that it's really important to keep the pressure and keep the attention on the front lines.
Absolutely. I want to thank you so much, Jennifer, for joining us today. We'll post links to the websites that you mentioned from our site, and we'll continue to follow the story from here. Thanks so much.
Perfect. Thank you.
My guest has been Jennifer Wickham, media coordinator for the Gitumden camp. We've been discussing the First Nations Wet'suwet'en struggle against a major pipeline project, actually a number of projects that have sparked protests across Canada. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes, and now Spotify.